You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Yud Kina Yud Beis. Kina Tes Zion 16. It's a fascinating story that the Kina refers to when Titus entered the Beis HaMikdash to destroy it. Titus, of course, was the one who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. And that's the account that the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Nun Vav, records. I'd like to learn a piece of the Gemara in Gittin with you so we can understand this Kina, and maybe re-sensitize ourselves next time we go to Eretz Yisrael. Hopefully it won't be the case and we see where the Jews are standing, where the Arabs are standing on Har HaBayis. So they called Titus, the general, to destroy Yerushalayim. Me'asa, what did he do when he arrived? Tafas zona biyadu, he took a prostitute in his hands, v'nichnas beis kodesh hakodashim, and he spread out a Sefer Torah, and he did an Aveira on the Sefer Torah itself. V'natal sayif, he withdrew a sword. V'gider es haparochas, and he slashed the parochas, which is referred to in the fourth line of this kina. It's a direct quote from the Gemara in Gittin, V'gide parochas. V'nasa neis. You know what happened when he slashed the parochas? Blood started bubbling out of the parochas. You know what Titus thought? Titus lifted up his chest and said, "Oh, I did it. I killed God himself. Harages atzmo." Me'asa, what did he do? He took the parochas and he used it as, you ever see people running away from home? You know that classical picture? A kid who has a long stick and on the back of this, top of the stick, he has a little blanket that he wraps up his possessions and he hooks it to the back of the stick. That's precisely what Titus did with the parochas of the Kodesh HaKodeshim itself. And he put the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash into this little sack that he took from the parochas that was made by those incredible people who knew how to do avodah, who knew how to weave all the kavanas of Shem Hashem into that parochas. And he went on his boat to boast back in Rome, back wherever he came from. Continues the Gemara, Amar alav nachshol shebayom letovo, gigantic wave came to sink the boat. Titus, ever the Baal Gaiva, calls up, "Oh, I see, I guess. Kimidumani, it appears to me that their God, he could only do stuff in the water. When he wanted to destroy Paro, he sunk him in water. Basisra, Tava Bayam. So now he wants to sink me in the water also. If God, their God is strong, let him come up to the Yabasha and do battle with me." I just realized this right this second. Isn't that funny? 30 seconds ago, he was convinced that he killed God. Now all of a sudden, when he's in danger, what does he say? "Oh, there's a God." Okay, he still has a gaiva to it, to God. He still says, "Oh, do battle with me," but all of a sudden he realizes that there's a God. Yatzis a baskel v'amrelo. Baskel emanates from the heavens and calls down to him, Rasha ben benoshel esav harasha. I have a tiny little Bria Kal, a tiny little insect called a yitush, mosquito. You know what the most dangerous creature in all of the animal world is? It's not a crocodile, it's not an alligator, it's a mosquito. Aleli abash v'tase mamlucha, forget about fighting with me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, fight with that little mosquito. He went on to the Abasha, a little mosquito entered his brain, started pecking away. The Gemara goes on to say that when he died, they did an autopsy, and they saw this mosquito had grown into this terribly frightening bird with a beak to peck made out of copper. That's the story of Titus we're about to read about. I want to ask you a question. I think it's a very important question. I think this lesson could give us a lot of nechama and the other way as well. Whenever Kodesh Baruch wants to kill Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't, because you know what's going to happen? What are the Goyim going to say? And for that argument, HaKadosh Baruch Hu time and again saves Klal Yisrael. Rabbosai, simple question. How in the world could HaKadosh Baruch Hu do a nace to make the Paroches bleed so that Titus and all those who are watching could be convinced that they killed God? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is dead. They found his heart, Kivyachol. And he was stabbed in the heart. There's no more Hashem. There's no God. He's dead. God is dead. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing to turn the world upside down so there shouldn't be a chilul of Hashem, so that there shouldn't be a moment that the goyim of the world should question his koach. And here, he's allowing himself to be stabbed in the heart, Kivyachol, and bleed through the paroches, and to do a nes for that? I want to share with you an incredible thought. The Chabina Rav's daughter had a severe eye issue, and they went from doctor to doctor throughout Europe to try to cure her eye concern, to no avail. Finally, they went to the greatest eye specialist in Europe, some big doctor in Vienna. He inspected her eyes, and he said, she doesn't have any sickness of the eye. It appears to me that she cries a lot. Shabina Rav was surprised because his daughter was a happy, healthy, emotionally sound kid. Shabina Rav, the doctor, said, do you cry a lot? Sheepishly, she looked down and said, I do. Shabina Rav was taken aback. He's like, felt very bad. He wasn't doing a good job raising his daughter. Sweetheart, what do you cry about? He said, because every night, she said, I hear my father crying for all the cholim that the Hasidim bring to him. And I hear him crying in his room. So I sit in my bedroom before I go to sleep and I cry with him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu let himself bleed. You know why? Ima Anochi Bitzara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, my children are being stabbed by Titus' swords. I shouldn't be. Friedrich Nietzsche and Hegel, God is dead, right? Yes, God is dead, exactly. He lets himself be killed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu risked this incredible, this frightening Chilul Hashem. What greater Chilul Hashem could there be than to see, allow people to perceive that he's dead, to show that he's suffering with us? When we're in pain, he, Kivyachol, is in that same pain. When we're being killed, Kivyachol, he's being killed, not because he's being killed, because he wants to be killed, Kivyachol. He wants to have that pain that we're having pain. Where was Hashem when we were beaten by the Bolsheviks? He was being beaten with those same clubs. Where was Hashem when we were freezing in Siberia? He was freezing with us. Where is Hashem when we were starving to death in the ghettos and the concentration camps? He was starving with us. Where was Hashem when we were being burnt in the crematoria? Who's being burnt, freezing, killed with us? Frightening Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about people are being killed because they violated a chiyuv, a losase d'orais that has a carries with it a chiyuv misa, a chiyuv execution. And the Mishnah there, Amar Rabbi Meir, b'shah she'adam mitztar, when a person, it seems from the context of that Mishnah, is even a person who's a rasha, person encounters pain. Shchina malosh nomeres. What does Hashem say when a Jewish person is enduring pain? Kalni meiroshi, kalni mizroi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries, "Oy, my head hurts. Oy, my arm hurts." Concludes the Mishnah. If the makom, if HaKadosh Baruch is mitztar for the dam of rishayim that is nishpach, kavachom radam al shel tzadikim. The pain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu suffers Every time there's another Karban Rachmana Litzlan. When we hear something on the news, something, some terrible news coming from Afrinat Yisrael, we're so used to it, it doesn't make an impact on us. The mother of that little kid is crying. The child of that father who was killed on the way home or on the way to the shul, they're crying. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is crying. And we can't cry. We're too busy to cry. We don't have time to cry. We have to get to work. You know what? Knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ima Anochi B'Tzara, in the same way, that's why Chazal say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Sneh, not in a great Erez, in a cedar tree, rather in a lowly Sneh, to show Ima Anochi B'Tzara, Klal Yisrael is in pain, how could I appear, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kivyachu, in a great tree, but rather in a lowly Sneh, Ima Anochi B'Tzara. We can't be misabel on our own accord for what we lack. Maybe we could be sad for the Shechina's pain that he has to endure. If I can't feel the pain of a fellow Jew who, Rachman Islan, is going through chemotherapy, and his family and his children, what they're going through, maybe I could feel bad that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to feel that pain. That's the lesson that we learn from Titus, from the blood that is oozing out of the parochas. The story that we just talked about is described in more detail in Kina Tezayin, Zechor Asher Asat Tzar Bifnim. Kina Yudzayin 17, a very different kind of Kina, very powerful and descriptive and very rich images, frightening images. But I have to apologize, there's two points that I have to make on the previous Kina that I can't ignore. If you turn back to the Kina we just said, Kina Tezayin, if you have the article at the bottom of page 226, Eliezer HaKalir is remarking how remarkable it is that Avosenu Zarekech Nisu B'Acharav HaChleish, when Nadav and Avihu went into the Beis HaMikdash, not exactly as they were supposed to, an Esh came down from Shemaim, destroyed them, and here you have Titus taking a Zona into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and walking out, nothing happens. I wanted to tell you a story that happened. One of my students saw the first, I think I saw first summer program about 9 years ago. One of my boys, Aryeh Chaim, first time in Eretz Yisrael, and we had one weekend in the Old City. And we had Friday night Kabbalah Shabbos, a rooftop in the Old City, an incredible, incredible rooftop from which you could really see not the Kotel but onto Har HaBayis itself. An absolutely beautiful way to start Shabbos. It's such an incredible element for for somebody who had been to Eretz Yisrael, had been to the Old City, but for somebody who's never been to Eretz Yisrael, never been to the Old City, and to be Friday night Kabbalah Shabbos on this rooftop, mom, it's seeing Har HaBayis emotionally, it's hard to imagine. 18, 19 year old boy. And we started Kabbalah Shabbos towards the back of the rooftop so they couldn't see. And then at some point in the Kabbalah Shabbos, we sort of moved forward to the front of the roof so we could see that incredible view. And everybody, as we moved forward, and they were singing and dancing during Kabbalah Shabbos and every Karbach type of davening. And then I noticed from the corner of my eye, as Aryeh Chaim looked for that first time over to see Har HaBayis, he was paralyzed. Everybody else is singing, dancing, he's standing there in the corner. He takes off his shoes and he sits on the floor of the roof by himself on Friday night on Shabbos. I didn't know what happened. Try to pull him into the dancing and he just get away from me. You know why he kicked off his shoes? Not because they weren't comfortable. Because he saw the Arab kids playing soccer on Har HaBayis. The place where Nadav and Avihu went with whatever their issue was, they didn't have the right covenant and they were killed. The Kohanim Gedolim did something a little bit different in the Ketores, they were killed. And here you have Arab kids and here this boy from public school, from Long Island public school, he sees that and he has that sensitivity, that incredible sensitivity that I guess I didn't have. He didn't know you're not allowed to do Avelus, Fira Avelus on Shabbos. Sat down on the floor on that roof, kicked off his shoes, and he was ois mensch the entire Shabbos. That's part of what we are being mekonin about. These kids are playing soccer in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Forget about Ezes Nashim, Ezes Yisrael. Goyim aren't even allowed in that any area. Women aren't allowed in certain places. Yisrael's not allowed in certain places. Levim aren't allowed in. Kohanim aren't even allowed in some. And these kids are playing soccer there? That's one point. Other point to get about this past Kina, towards the end of the Kina, a reference, a hint, the last page, on page 230 in the middle of the page, the Belozah Kalir references the Medrash of the three boats of children who are sent to be taken advantage of, whether it's Mishkav Zachar, whether it's to be sold as slaves, whatever it was. And they chose, realizing what their end is going to be, they chose that they'd rather be Moser Nafshim al Kiddush Hashem than be violating one of the Arag Val Yavars. Where does that koach that even a child has to realize that a life violating Torah is not worth living, to have that mindset, that inner strength, to rather die than to be forced to do a avodah zara, to be forced to do arayas, to be forced to do against Ratzon Hashem? Is that any different than our grandparents as they were being forced into those showers? They sang Animamin. The same Animamin that I sang with my children last night after Shkia. We couldn't eat. We finished eating, washed my face, took a last cup of seltzer, a few grapes before the fast, then we sat down. What could we do last night? So I told my kids before that we're going to sit and we're going to sing songs about Yerushalayim, and we sang Animamin. The same tune. My fourth grade in preschool, Baruch Hashem, Har Mora taught her that same tune. That same tune that our grandparents sang in a very different situation. Yes, it was a tishba for them also. Their last. Whether it was on tishba of any other day of the year. That same tune to Animamin, we still sing that tune. We're going to start Kina Yud Zayin. Kina Yud Zayin is a very descriptive, almost frighteningly descriptive Kina, referring to the Psukim in Eicha that talks about the incredible depravity that we reached out of incredible pain. When people are in incredible pain, they do incredible things. When people are in terrible pain, they do terrible things. It's a lesson, because when we interact with other people, sometimes people hurt us. Our spouses might say comments to us. Kids might say things. Associates at work, people say things. Sometimes we have to realize that when people are in pain, they say crazy things, not because they really feel that way or they're so terrible. Just when people are in pain, they do terrible things. Say terrible things. It's Aleph Beis. Aleph Beis. Going through all the terrible klalos that we encountered at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, and it didn't stop there. For the rest of our journey on this trail of tears that we spoke about last night, and the conclusion of all the tsar and yogon and pain that we encounter is one line. After repeating the first line in Tochan, the bottom of 234 in the art scroll, the very last line of the Kina, after repeating in Tochan and Hashem Piryam, Mashmim, how could it be that such a thing will happen? We're very ready to say how terrible things are, and we're ready to complain how Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't give us what we want, and how Kodesh Baruch Hu punishes us. But you know, we're not so quick to realize and so quick to say that we did some things wrong too. V'miyeharig, the last line, Yeharig v'mitash Hashem Kohen v'navi, that we also killed Gedalia, and we did some averes also, that we're not so quick to say. To complain is so easy. People like to complain to the president of the shul, this is wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong. So everyone who's ready to complain so easy, you're also ready to help? To make things better? You just want to complain. This kina talks about the pain of a mother, and the imagery is so gross that it's almost, when we read it, we can't feel the emotions that it should feel. So perhaps to help us feel that pain of a mother whose child is going through something, I'd like to share a very poignant article with you. I'm going to read a story. I cry when I hear it. It's a little bit, if a person's weak of heart is welcome to step outside. A person doesn't want to hear this kind of thing, they should step outside. By Naomi Cohn, it's her real name. I had a family, 4 beautiful children, 2 boys, 2 girls, an open home filled with guests all the time, wonderful relationship with my parents and siblings, hardworking husband, enough money to pay the bills, health, my life was so perfect. Then my world suddenly caved in. My talented husband was being transferred down, this is a true story, to Florida. And I look forward to building a new fun life for our family, being closer to my father, my grandmother. We were knee-deep in packing tape and boxes as the school year was coming to an end, and right before our move, we had to go to Chicago for a friend's wedding. In Chicago, the baby got a little fever, started crying Sunday afternoon. I was worried he might have an ear infection, so they gave him some baby Motrin, and he fell asleep. He was dressing so deeply uncomfortable that I left my sister's house while we went to the wedding, instead of dressing him and taking him along. We came home past midnight, he was sleeping in his pack and play. I couldn't sleep very well, he was making noises that sounded like he was having a bad dream. Early in the morning, I took him out of bed, it was dark in our room, so I couldn't be sure. But he didn't look right. He was definitely sick, I decided. But something seemed more alarming. I woke my husband. Does he look funny to you? This boy needs to get to a hospital. My usually underreactive husband said. We ran upstairs, leaving the other kids sleeping in the basement. The next few minutes, hours, and days seemed like slow motion. Asking my niece for the keys to the car, I decided we couldn't drive with him in this condition, calling 911. Waiting what seemed like a very long time before hearing sirens as the ambulance approached the house, sitting outside with the paramedics. Blood sugar was too low. His head was turned to the side. He was staring to the left. My uncle, a doctor, running up the block in response to my frantic phone call minutes earlier. The ER doctor was quite worried. Blood tests, IVs, MRIs, sepsis, meningitis, infection. Holding this little child on the stark white stretcher and just waiting. He seemed to be calming down a little, closing his eyes to rest, but then startling himself awake, his tired body was giving up and giving in. But at least he was startling himself to wake to breathe, which is a good sign to me. They transferred him to the children's hospital. I realized we might not get home that night. Something might be very wrong. I called my mother in Israel. Please daven for him. And I reminded myself that Hashem doesn't give us what we can't handle. And I knew that I couldn't handle losing my son, so it would be okay, right? But that knowing feeling that this was the beginning of the end. Waiting and waiting for the pediatric ICU doctor to talk to us, another brain scan. No activity. Well, no more tomorrow. Still no activity in the brain and stem. It's a matter of time. Say your goodbyes, he said. Just a virus that got into his spinal fluid, they said. No cause. No reason. We couldn't have done anything different. It was no one's fault. But I knew that it must be my fault. I must not have valued the lives that I created. So now he is taking what away. I knew that he'd never wake up again. All those wires and tubes and beeping. Holding him and after waiting all that time. Being careful not to move his breathing tube. 9 days later, he was gone. Our home was packed up, sent to Florida without us, following his aron, sitting in the chair, listening to my husband read the hesped, hearing people crying behind me, watching them, bury my son, thinking of their own healthy children. Mine was gone. My once full, happy, satisfying life was empty, sad, constant yearning inside of me for the familiarity of being complete. Turned the most basic daily motions into tears of desperate sadness, like picking out vegetables in the store, switching a lot of laundry. I was forever incomplete. been a year now since my toddler died. A year that was mostly spent remembering only that he was gone and not much on thinking about his amazing personality. I let myself remember him 2 weeks ago on his first yard site. I remember holding him, how he'd pat my shoulder, the way we do to our babies. I remember his chubby hands taking hold of my cheeks, planting a big messy kiss on my lips. I remember him dropping the food off his tray and saying, uh-oh, saying more for more drink. The boastful pride I felt pushing him and his older sister in the double stroller to shul, or down the aisle in the grocery store. After we moved to Florida, I was too sad to function. I cried to relieve the painful pressure that I felt in the chest, but no relief would come. I reminded myself to be a good mother to the other kids. I didn't want them to lose their brother and their mother, even if I was still here physically. Somehow I got through the year taking carpool without having to count his seat as occupied, buying three Shabbos treats instead of four, thinking in fives instead of sixes when making reservations, setting the table, his birthday, his yard site. I love being a mother to my older three. I daven better, speak to Hashem more often. For as many years as I can remember, the 3 weeks was always strange for me. I followed all the halachos. I didn't get a haircut, I didn't go shopping, I didn't listen to music, but was rather rote. I tried to imagine what we're missing not having a Beis HaMikdash, so I'd be sad that we were in a galus, but it was hard, with my perfect family, beautiful house, my nice clothes. I no longer struggle to mourn for something that I never loved or held dear. This year is different for me. No more perfect home. My nice clothes are meaningless to me without my son to complete the picture. Now I realize what it was to have felt like 2,000 years ago to lose the Beis HaMikdash. We had a home, a place of security, safety, and comfort. Walking down the street brought a true pride, the same way walking down the street with my children filled me with pride. Now that home is gone, burned to the ground. And I know that when Mashiach comes and rebuilds the Beis HaMikdash, I'll also get back my completeness. I no longer struggle to yearn for something I never knew, to something that I never loved or held dear, because I've suffered the unimaginable, unbearable loss of my son. I understand a little bit how I should feel as a Jew during this time. Now you earn so much more for the Geula. I only wish I didn't have to learn to yearn by losing my son. The next Kina, what we'll say is Kina Yotess. It will be the last Kina from Rabbi Elazar HaKalir that we'll recite this morning. Kina Yotess is very important because it fulfills the mitzvah of Tzidduk HaDin, one of the building blocks of a relationship between two people, especially between spouses, is the ability to say that it's my fault, you're right. And there's a gaiva that beats within our hearts that doesn't want us to say that, because that means I'm less of a person if I'm wrong and you're right and it's my fault. So we have a solution. We just say the words again and again and again, and we don't feel them, we don't realize them. We just say them just to make somebody else feel good, to end the fight. When we say this kina, our goal is going to be not like that. Our goal is to feel more and more and more, to the extent that we are able, that it's taka true, you're right. Lecha Hashem Hatzdaka. Lecha Hashem Hatzdaka. Lecha Hashem Hatzdaka. We don't have any tainas against you. We have no questions about what you've done. We don't question anything that you've sent our way. You know why? Because we realize that it's all because of Velanu Boshes Hapanim. Velanu Boshes Hapanim. It's our fault. We accept responsibility. The galus, the length of the galus, the severity of the galus, is nothing other than our own shortcomings. I want to share with you a Ramak in Tomer Dvora. I might say this Ramak again before Yom Kippur. Imagine somebody knocks on your door. Suit is stained. It's almost hard to keep the door open because he smells like he hasn't showered in who knows how long. When he says in a hoarse voice that I haven't eaten a meal in 6 days, you believe him 1,000%. He says, can I have a bite to eat? You go inside. Sunday morning, you have leftover challah. You hand him a challah. You feel good because you just, I don't know, you saved somebody. You gave them something to live, some food they haven't eaten. They're starving. And you could see his gaunt figure. You could see that he's starving. Takes the challah from your hand. He looks at the challah. He says, thank you very much. Then looks you in the eye. Pulls the challah close to his body. And swings and whacks you against the face with the challah. You're wondering, is your ear bleeding? Is your jaw broken from that smack? I just gave you a challah. You were so needy. You were hungry. I just gave it to you. And what are you doing with it? You're smacking me in the face. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mouth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a hands, gave us feet, gave us ears, gave us eyes to help us do what we need, to help us live as we could, should, would live. And we take those gifts, says Rav Moshe Kodaver in Tomer Dvora, and what do we do with them? We take the gifts that our Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us and we smack him in the face. You gave me a mouth to speak Divrei Kodesh, to speak Divrei Torah, to daven with Kavana. And I speak Lashon Hara, and I talk during davening, and I talk during laning. You give me ears to hear Divrei Torah. And I listen to Lashon Hara. And I listen to somebody speak to me during laning. I listen to somebody speak to me during davening. You give me feet to run to shul, to run to Beis Medrash. And somehow I'm so much better able to run to the LIRR, not to miss the 7:42 train, than I am to miss the 7:45 Baruch Brachos. Hashem gave us that loaf of bread and we take it, you know, we do it and we smack him across the face with it. Lecha Hashem HaTzedakah. Every letter of the Aleph Beis. With all that you gave us. V'lanu boshes hapanim, with how we take what you gave us and reciprocate, not in kind. Yotes Tziduk Hadin. Lecha Adonai HaTzedakah. V'lanu boshes hapanim. The kina that we're going to recite now, kina chaf aleph, is the beginning of a second set of kinos. We finished the kinos in Rulaz HaKalir to talk about Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, and that which was associated with those points in history. Now we're going to start the discussion of things that happened throughout the generations. Among them, the things that happened later on in history. The first one is still in the time of Bayis Sheni. This is the first kina that we're going to recite that's not written by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. We say a similar kina, Arzei Alevanon, on Yom Kippur. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that there is a difference between that which we recite, this story of the Asorah Hu Gemalchus on Yom Kippur, as opposed to today. On Aruge, on Yom Kippur, we recite, we talk about the Aruge Malchus because the same reason that the Kriyas HaTorah on Yom Kippur is about Misas Nadav Aviyu at Mincha. And why is the Yom Kippur Avoda prefaced in the Parsha by Misas Bnei Aaron? As I'll tell us, because just as Yom Kippur is Mechaper, so to me Tzadikim are Mechaper. And that is explained by Rabbi Soloveitchik. That's why on Yom Kippur we talk about Asar Harugei Malchus as a Kapara. Because we want to invoke as many different modes of kapara that we can. So we have a kapara of our own vidui, and we have the kapara of the, we talk about the avoda. And then we have the kapara of Misa Tzadik and Tubim Chapras as well. Today, that's not the reason why we recite this kina. Today it's because we're about Avelus. What are we in Avelus about? We're Avelus about Eretz Yisrael, Avelus about Yerushalayim, Avelus about the Beis HaMikdash. This kina proves that is wrong. This kina proves that the Romans thought they knew how to destroy us, and then they found that they were wrong. Because they thought that the Beis HaMikdash was that which kept us together, and they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and lo and behold, you know what? Klal Yisrael did not cease functioning. We continued. 60 years later, time of Bar Kokhba, they realized that it wasn't the Beis HaMikdash that was the glue that held us together, but it was the Torah that holds us together, keeps us alive, and therefore they set out on a new mission, having destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. That was already on their resume. They have to add to build their resume. Now they have to destroy Torah. That's the historical background to Azel Vanon. You know what? You talk to people of different stripes, of different ilks. Talk about Eretz Yisrael, fundamental, essential Eretz Yisrael is to the Jewish experience, to identify as a Jew. Eretz Yisrael doesn't save Judaism. Eretz Yisrael without Torah and without mitzvahs doesn't save Judaism. We lived for 1900 some odd years without Eretz Yisrael. We limped along. It was a miserable existence. We were crippled. We didn't have a hand to move. We didn't have feet to walk, but we had a pumping, beating heart. It was the Torah that was that beating heart. And you know, sometimes people, different political views, talk about the role of Torah, keep the Jewish people alive, going to war, being in the army, being in yeshiva, get people very riled up. Not going to take any political positions right now, but I would like to make it very clear. If anyone you know rolls their eyes when they hear that it's Torah, the learning Torah, that plays a crucial role in our safety and in the continuity of Klal Yisrael, somebody rolls their eyes, is lacking something very essential, very fundamental. That's what this kina is all about our avelus for Torah, for those who embody Torah. I want to share with you a thought that I think is a deep thought. What's the connection really between Hasorah Gemalchus and Churban Beis HaMikdash? So maybe you just say, yeah, you know, they're trying to destroy Klal Yisrael. So first you destroy Beis HaMikdash, like we just said, then you try to destroy Torah. It's much deeper than that. What is the goal of the Beis HaMikdash? Torah tells us, Shachanti B'Sacham, there has to be a place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be evident, can be manifest, can be expressed. But how is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how is the Shechina expressed in this world? The way the Shechina is expressed in this world is only through individuals living their lives according to His will. That is the expression of Shechina in this world. People who are Moser Nefesh for Ratzon Hashem, our tzaddikim, our talmidei chachamim, they are the manifestation of Ratzon Hashem in this world, which is the exact same thing as the Beis HaMikdash, to be a makom for Hashras HaShechina. And that's why Misas Tzadikim are mechaper, as the Beis HaMikdash is mechaper.
And that's why Chazal say, Kosha Mises Tadikin Kisreifas Beis Elokeinu. Because it is one and the same. This is the opportunity where Hashem's will could be revealed through a Beis HaMikdash, and that's exactly what this tzaddik does with his life or her life. If you look, if you have the article on the bottom of page 251, Yeshua ben Elisha, one of the Asari Lugay Malchus, the Kohen Gadol, Tziva Lahafshit as Rosho Besar HaSachira, they wanted his skin to be flayed off of his muscle to taxidermy it. You go to a hunting lodge, you see the taxidermies on the wall, those heads of bulls and heads of whatever else they find with the big horns. That's what he wanted to do with Rabbi Elisha, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha's face. He was beautiful, this Kohen Gadol. For that same reason, the Kina, two Kinas later, Kina Chaf Gimel, is going to talk about his children, his daughter, his son, that were sold in the captives of Churban Bayis Sheni and sold to Rome, and two slave owners, one bought his daughter, one bought his son, and they meet each other in the shuk somewhere, saying, each boasting how they bought a beautiful Eved from Eretz Yisrael, and they marry them off. When they realize, we'll see there when we get to it in two kinas from now, Yishol ben Elish was gorgeous, as was his daughter and was his son. Why was he so beautiful that the executioner's daughter or the general's daughter wanted to, if not spare him for her own personal gratification, at least taxidermy his face to post up or to enjoy looking at his beauty? I saw from Evolbe, Nalei Shur, that when we think of Ruchnius, it's not Ruchnius in a vacuum. Ruchnius brings a perfection to Gashmius as well. Yishmael ben Elisha went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That experience of encountering Ruchnius, of encountering a Kodesh Baruch Hu, brought a perfection not just to his neshama, but to his guf, and therefore he absorbed an incredible beauty that the Kohanim Gedolim had that they absorbed, that they were imbued by that Kedusha of entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Many of you know of Mordechai Willig. He has a son of Simcha Willig, friend of mine, teaches with me. In the summers, they bring him to Atlantic Beach. He's incredible with young kids. I have to credit him. He has a lot of guts, Simcha Willig. Rav Simcha Willig. He had a baby boy, I think 2 years ago. You know what he named him? Maybe this past year, 2 years ago, I don't remember. He named him Rowie. It's not a typical name, at least in America. Yeshiva boy naming his kids, you know, Israel kid naming his son Rowie. He named it after Roy Klein. Ben Torah, Hezdernik, when he saw a grenade thrown at his platoon, what was it, 2 years, 4 years ago? How he jumped on it, screaming, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, to save the rest of his platoon, and they did live because of the dam that he spilled. We learned last night that when Beitah was destroyed, they were able to plant their vineyards with the blood that the Jews, that the spilled Jews have spilled at Churban Beitah. We are planting our vineyards on the blood that people spilled for us. And Simcha Willig had the guts, to name his son Rowi. Not a typical name. It's not an Avram, a Yitzchak, a Yaakov, a Moshe, a Aaron, a Shlomo like so many of the rest of us. That his son should know that we live for Klal Yisrael, that we follow the way of Rabbi Akiva that we're about to read about. Rabbi Akiva, as he's about to be destroyed, as he's about to be killed. Yatzisa Nishmasa Be'echad. Roy Klein. Yatzisa Nishmasa Be'echad. He threw himself on the grenade as he said, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You know what's waiting for him? Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva. Gufach tar bekomi netara. What do you mean, gufach? Rabbi Akiva, who cares about Rabbi Akiva's guf? Rabbi Akiva, this was his neshama, it was his seichel, it was his mind. He was the king, he was the master of Torah, greater in a certain sense than Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu chalish, because he didn't understand when he saw a vision of Rabbi Akiva's shir. He said, Hashem, don't give the Torah to me, give it to Rabbi Akiva. Why are we praising at the end of this kina, in the middle of this kina? Gufach tar, your guf is tar.
How many gufim tahorim have given their lives with Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? We're not even going back 60 years. Going back 2 years. As we say, Arzei Alevanon, we realize the pain that we feel for the lack of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our midst, and that is identical to the lack of the Shriyas HaShchin in the Beis HaMikdash, and that is identical to the death of those people who are the vehicles, the vessels that carry the Shechina in them, the tzaddikim of all of the generations, and our generation included, the people, whether you know them as rabbis or as religious people, as not religious people, people are Moser Nefesh. So in a book, this book, again, a beautiful story, touched by tears, Rabbi Yechiel Spiro, he was teaching somewhere, I think himself, Rabbi Spiro, maybe he was quoting somebody else, as a teacher in a public school somewhere, they took the kids out for some, like an NCSY type of thing, and he was giving some class in the public school and said to the Jewish kids, any of you feel your neshama? And a public school kid got up and said, yeah, once I went to my cousin's, you know, baptism or something, I walked into the church and I couldn't breathe. I started to choke. I felt my neshama. We can't blame anybody. Not having the opportunities that other people have. Every Yid is Moser Nefesh for Yiddishkeit, Kol Echad Lefi Mashu, for that Mesiras Nefesh that any Yid and every Yid can have is what we're being misabel for. And of course, all the more so for those people who spent every moment of their living breaths dedicated to nothing other than Ratzon Hashem, doing the mitzvos and fulfilling the mitzvos, living for Torah and here being killed for nothing other than being great in Torah. The next kina that we're going to do is Kina Chaf Beis, and if you don't know who the author is, it's talking about some attack, like we've had so many at some point in our history, that we were attacked, and realizing what was going to happen, we did what was the impossible. If I could ask you, please, to look, if you have the art scroll, page 256, top line, Vishas is Achiv Chizku Be'ezra, that he strengthened one another, Hidavek Bir Torah, to gather together with Yiro, with Tahora, the Li Kro, without bowing down to Avodah Zarah, Lochasu Gever, Gvir, nobody, they didn't have pity, Albonim Tzfiras Tifra, on their glory, on their glorious children, Aval, but rather, Ozru Gvura Yisera. Where do we say Ozer Yisrael B'Gvura? In the morning, we gird ourselves with Gvura. What does it mean to gird ourselves with Gvura when we get up in the morning? Not like this. They gird themselves with Gvura to take their little babies in their hands, their young children, their toddlers, their elementary school kids, their preschool kids, their second graders, to snap their necks, La'alom Rosh V'likros Shedra, to say, Lo zachinu l'gadol lechem haTorah, we weren't so good to be magdil you to Torah better than krivchem kolav haTorah better than we should sacrifice you as karbanos. V'nizkim achem l'oros, that we could together, join together in a better life somewhere else. I want to share with you from the book that I read last night, story of this young girl, Pua Steiner. The book is called Forever My Jerusalem. Talking about before, last night we talked about when they were thrown out of the old city by the Jordanian legionnaires in 1948, 3 days after Israel became a state. Monday, the 8th of Iyar, a day I shall never forget, we were all together in our neighbor's one-room apartment. Several families had moved in there, each squeezing into another corner. Heavy gunfire and shells were bombarding the quarter from all sides. Since Friday, we had been completely cut off from the world. We had no idea what was happening outside. We were in very low spirits, fully aware of how few soldiers we had and how poorly they were armed. All at once, a hysterical throng of men, women, and children rushed into Bate Machsa courtyard from the more distant streets, screaming terrible news. The Arabs had attacked the Jewish quarter road.
Women with babies in their arms let out blood-curling curls. With my own eyes, I saw them with knives. What are you sitting here for? Run away, run away. Soon they'll be here, they'll slaughter us all. In no time, Bati Machsa was gathered, flooded with crowds. Bati Machsa, by the way, is where Zilberman's. If you go to Yerushalayim today, you see Zilberman's cheder. It's in the building of Bati Machsa. This is the building that they're talking about. Screaming in panic, gangs of murderers, armed riders, anyone who doesn't run away will be slaughtered. Panic seized us all, grabbing whatever food, clothing was at hand. We took the children, run, joined the fleeing herd. Waves of people flooded the large courtyard, causing mass hysteria. If you've been there, you know there's a gigantic courtyard where the kids have recess in front of that building. The terror was contagious. Soon all the houses were empty. Abba grabbed my little brother in a food basket. Ima grabbed my little brother. Abba put little Ruthie on his shoulders. We began to run together with everyone else. Pushing, shoving, we were hundreds of panic-stricken refugees like a flock of sheep escaping from a pack of bloodthirsty wolves. The frying mass of humanity pushed forward towards the stairs underneath Bati Machsa at the edge of the corridor. We ran further and further till we reached the last houses, then the crowd stopped in its tracks. The humming sound of a shell could be heard over all the noise and pandemonium. Stop, stop, called a few people. You're running straight into the firing line of the mortars from Harazesim. We were trapped, surrounded. Before us, fire-spitting mortars, and behind us, Arab gangs. But this time, no miracle took place. The sea of enemies was not split. There was no escape. Don't go forwards, don't go backwards, just stay here, get inside. The message was passed through the crowd. People started rushing to the nearest houses. Furnishings were thrown out of the door, thrown out of the rooms, and doors were ripped off their hinges as people tried to make more room. Crowds bursting into apartments. Anyone could push his way into somewhere, anywhere. I don't remember if it was an apartment or a shul, but as soon as we entered, the men crowded to one side and the women to the other. They began to daven. I could see the fear of death in the eyes of all the adults. Seeing the men sobbing, their bodies quaking, the women weeping, babies and the children were screaming, I too burst into tears. Ima found Sidurim for Naomi and me. Although it was Iyar, the Tzibur was saying the Amun Noraim davening. Avinu Malkeinu Kras Rog Zardinenu, the men said, and the women were repeating the words tearfully. Avinu Malkeinu Chus Rachem Aleinu Val Tapeinu. Avinu Malkeinu Asei Laman Harugim Hashem Kodshecha. While I davened, I could envision everyone slaughtered, our blood flowing like water. I looked towards the door. What were those sounds outside? Had the murderers arrived? My whole body began to shake. The cries grew louder. The men prayed as if trying to break the very gates of heaven. As they prayed, they beat their hearts. I said to Abba, what are they? I said to my Ima, what are they saying? I asked, paralyzed with fear. The vidui, said one woman. The vidui before dying. I asked someone to find me the place in my sitter. Chatanu, Avinu, Prashanu, I heard them saying. Together with them, I cried and I beat my heart. Soon the whole congregation finished reciting the vidui, and now we waited for the bitter end to come. Abba gestured to Naomi and me to come to him. He took us into one of the corners. His face was dark and serious. I must talk to you. There are things that a father must command his children. You're my oldest daughters, and I must tell you what's in my heart. Soon the gang of Arabs will arrive. This won't be the first time that Jews have been slaughtered here. You know what fate is in store for us. Maybe a miracle will happen and they'll have mercy on the women and children. But not the men. Abba, Abba, we cried, unable to restrain our tears. Don't speak like that. Imo, who just followed us out to the courtyard and overheard Abba's words, said, Shlomo, don't talk like that to the children. Stop, please. Abba ignored her, took my hand in one of his hands and Naomi in the other's hand. I looked into his blue-green eyes. They were gazing far away, far beyond the borders of time and space. No one knows what will happen, my father went on. No one knows whose life will be saved, whose won't, whose will not. I want you to know now, once and for always, that the most important thing in this life is the Torah. Nothing in this world has any real value except for the Torah. When you grow up and ready to get married, remember my words. If you are to choose between a husband who has wealth, secular learning, honor, position, and one who has Torah, what will you choose? Torah, Torah, we promised, our voices quavering. Take care of your little sisters. And when they grow up, it is you who must pass my command on to them. Make sure that they too marry only Talmidei Chachamim. Learn in Yirei Shamayim, who value Torah above all. And last of all, your little brother. If it is Ratzon Hashem that I will no longer remain with you, remember that my greatest desire was to raise him to be a Talmid Chacham. You must take my place. For several long moments, we stood in the courtyard and cried till we could cry no more. The room was filled with capacity of people praying loudly and tearfully. We opened out the Tehillim, began to daven again. I guess Shlomo on Ches Iyar 1948 had learned the lesson from this kina, was following that eternal lesson that we've imbibed by saying this kina over the generations, and the responsibility that we bear to transmit those same lessons to our children. If you do have an English translation of this kina, Chaf Beis, I do urge you to read it in English. We're going to skip to kina Lamed Aleph. We're going to sing it together now. Lamed Aleph is contrast to what was when we left Mitzrayim, to what was when we left Yerushalayim. The words are self-evident, and we wait for the concluding line after all the Churban to be able to have a very different kind of reaction. The last words, B'shuvi l'Yerushalayim. The conscience that we talked about from the Alshich before, and the Alshich pointed out that when you realize how good something was, you could feel the pain. Talk about karbanos, it could be karbanos on the Mizbeach, or it could be karbanos of our children. They're leaders, they're Kohanim and Levinim who are leaders. The leaders could be the slave sellers, the taskmasters. There are different kinds of stones. There could be the stones on the choshen of the Kohen Gadol. There are stones that they catapult and throw and shoot at us. With that, Seish Dukati Bekirbi. Kina Lamed Vav. Lamed Vav is the beginning of the last series of kinos that no longer talk about the various things that happened to us throughout the generations, but to talk about Tzion, of extolling the beauty, the virtues of Eretz Yisrael, of Yerushalayim, of Tzion. It was written by Rabbi Yehuda Levi. Rabbi Yehuda Levi's most important sefer, the Kuzari. I want to share with you a line or two from the Kuzari that will help us appreciate what he writes here in this kina, talking about the beauty of Yerushalayim. Two lines. In the beginning, in the middle of the Sefer Kuzari, which is a conversation between Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and this Jew, and the Melech of Kuzar, who's examining all the different religions. After the Jew tells him about the fundamental purpose of Eretz Yisrael and of Yerushalayim in our religion, Chazal say, Kol Hador Be'eretz Yisrael, somebody like, as though one who doesn't have an Eloha, somebody who's buried in Eretz Yisrael, is always buried under the Mizbeach. And so many different Chazals talk about the beauty, the grandeur of Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. The Malach Kuzar says, Im Kain, if that's so, my dear Jew, Over Ata Al Mitzvah HaMechuyeves Lefi Sarasu, you're violating every day a mitzvah by not being here. What are you doing here in the land of Khazar? Why aren't you in Eretz Yisrael? And listen to his answer. Matzasa makom mecher pasi, Melech Kozar. You know what? You are right. You found my Achilles heel. You found my shame, my disgrace. That's in the middle of the Sefer. The end of the Sefer, there's a prologue. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes a chasima to the Sefer. And he says that after this conversation, the chaver, the Jewish rabbi that was having this conversation with the Melech Kozar, decides to get up and move to Eretz Yisrael and talks to the Melech Kozar about his decision. And he says that our actions are Ein HaMaisim Shleimim Kiyim Ba. Our actions are not full if not in Eretz Yisrael.
So many mitzvahs are only afforded to somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael. And listen to this. Listen to this, because there's a line that you've never, there's a machshava that you've never heard before. It's an incredibly powerful machshava. You know what? We can't bring the korbanos. Why is he traveling? Why did Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the year 1080, 1100, why did he go to Eretz Yisrael? There are no korbanos then. There's still no korbanos now. But listen to this incredible machshava that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi finishes off the entire Sefer Kuzari, the very last page. You know what? We can't bring a korban to be mechaper for this avera, for that avera that we owe. But you know what? Listen to this. But golus mechaperes avon. When you're in golus, when a person goes to the golus, that itself is mechaper, Chazal teach us. And listen to his take on that line. And therefore, what could be greater than going begolus to the makom hanirtza, to that place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be? If golus is usually going away from Yerushalayim, what could be better than going on a golus to where Hashem wants us to be? If leaving our home is mechaper, just imagine we leave our home to go where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be. How much kabbalah that could bring. And with that, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says goodbye to the king of Khazar, and he comes to Yerushalayim, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he's taken, and he writes this kina about the love for Yerushalayim. Lamed Vav Tzion Halos Tishali. Again, the Hebrew is very, very poetic and very difficult. If you have the English, I advise you to read the English. Hazocha Maskirov. We'll just one thought before. It's really something that I don't feel I could even speak about, probably because of the magnitude, as it's going to say itself. 10 times Yotzei Mitzrayim. We think how thirsty we are. Going a whole day, a whole Tisha B'Av. You know how many shilas I got about, am I going to have to fast? I have this, I have that. You know how many shilas I got over the past week? I'm going to have to fast a whole day. We're not in a cattle car. We had a big meal yesterday. And a kiddush, and a lunch, and a shalosh shudas, and everything else. Again, I'm not saying halach is halach. We have to fast when a person's sick, they have to eat. I'm not saying that. But to even begin to imagine, you know what thirst is? You know what it means to be thirsty? Thirsty doesn't mean, wow, I've been talking for the past 3 hours, I'm thirsty. Thirsty doesn't mean, you know, 3 minutes before Maariv tonight, I can't wait to have that orange juice. That's not what thirsty means. Being in a cattle car for two days, in the middle of August, without having filled yourself up on watermelon and grapes and cups of water and seltzer right before the fast, and maybe more than 2 days. I found a poem. I'd like to read it, then we'll just read. I don't even know if it's written by a Jew. It doesn't in any way articulate any of the pain. Just gives a perspective. And there's so much more that I don't even feel worthy or can't even bring my mind to imagine. Someone mentioned the word Holocaust. The old Jewish man said, no, such word I don't wish to hear, that happened years ago. Then he slowly folded up his sleeves and numbers etched in blue, told of the suffering he'd known and all he'd been through. A silence fell over one and all across the club room floor, and in his presence the word Holocaust was not mentioned though anymore. We had amongst us in the flesh one who had lived through H-E-L-L, but I wish he could have spoke of those sufferings he could tell. My heart went to that Jewish man who saw no sympathy. He wanted to block out his past as a bad memory. Don't mention that word to me, and little else he said. But I could picture a living soul whose thoughts were with the dead. That night I didn't sleep too well. I had a recurring dream. I watched the hungry slowly die. I heard the tortured scream. I saw a gray-haired Jewish man, the sorrow on his face. And I was in another time, a dark and a sadder place. I woke, and when I went to sleep, the dream returned to me. A Jewish man with tragic past who sought no sympathy. I see a young man in his prime with a hunger-wasted frame, with numbers branded on his hand. They even robbed him of his name. There's nothing we could say. Even the words of the kina are nothing compared to, we can't even imagine.
It's just about Chatzos. And we're going to start Elit Zion, the last Kina. And the last Kina has a problem. Because unlike practically every single that we said this morning that talks about Avelis, 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 but ends with a Nechama, here we have the last Kina we're going to say today. And it doesn't end with Nechama. Cry out for Tzion ve'areha, like a woman, b'tzirah, in her labor pains, like a besula wearing her sackcloth on her young husband who died. We know enough of those over the past few years in Eretz Yisrael. Where's the Nechama? It just repeats the first line of the Kina. There's something very unusual about this image, Isha v'tzireha. Anybody who's been in the maternity ward, wife had a baby, you hear the women screaming from the rooms. And they're screaming, and it's a blood-curdling scream. You hear people scream like they never screamed before. Uncontrollable. You hear curse words sometimes. But you know what's unique about that screaming, that pain? That right after that scream, you know what you always hear? You hear silence. Then you hear congratulations. It's a boy, it's a girl. And then almost always you hear a woman's voice. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. That's the crying that we're crying of. That's the crying that we've cried for the past 2,000 years. It's a cry and we're just waiting for that mazel tov. We're crying that uncontrollable, unbearable pain that no man on this side of the mechitza could even imagine. And that's the pain that Klal Yisrael have gone through every year and every Tisha B'Av, one after another. And we're still... We start this Kina, and we're going to have to end this Kina here on Central Avenue instead of on Rechav Miskav Ladach. And we're standing here like Isha B'Tzireha. We're crying those blood-curdling cries, waiting for the pain to end, waiting, knowing full well that after this pain is just going to give birth to a Mazel Tov. We should be Zocha to that Mazel Tov very speedily.
Elit Zion,
you have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.